Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you with us today as we visit with Patty Nagai. Back with us, she's a retired UW Extension horticulture educator, and today we'll talk with her about what you need to do in your garden before the cold and snow arrive. We can take a variety of questions, and I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Patty Nagai, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's good to be back on.
So here's the big question. How does your garden look right now?
You know, it is amazing how green everything still is. I'm still picking peppers, although a lot of it ended today because we're having our house resided and all of the gardens up close to the house had to be, you know, put to bed.
Yeah, so to speak.
But you just can't imagine how many peppers I've had this year. It has just been the year of peppers, the just crazy production. And the plants are still loaded with peppers, all different colors, sizes, and shapes. And if we hadn't pulled them out of the ground this morning, they would still be producing.
So these are hot peppers, not the traditional green peppers.
I still have traditional bell peppers as well, but those are actually out in my vegetable garden, so they're still there. But this weekend, I picked two big bowls full of hot and sweet peppers, some of the little snacking peppers as well as the big bell peppers, and roasted a whole bunch of them. So they're now safely packed away in my freezer.
So that's it for the vegetables. What about the flowers?
Well, there are still, I haven't really started cleaning up much of anything except for what's right around the house because everything is still blooming. I still have flowers. I still have some beautiful seed heads, and we know that leaving that foliage and those seed heads up as long as possible is really great for our birds as well as our insect populations. The bees are still flying, so they still need food. I mean, this is an incredibly warm October, so a lot of things that would have gone to sleep, I like to say that instead of, you know, die, they would have gone to sleep by now, are still out there flying around, and the plants are still growing, so I've just kind of left everything there for now.
Patty Nagai, our guest today, retired UW Extension horticulture educator. Give a call with your questions at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. How was your garden this year? Tell us about it. Daniel in Ontario has a question, so let's go there. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how's it going today?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah. So I just bought this little property here on the Kickapoo River, and I'm trying to get an orchard established and maybe do a windbreak. And lately, I've been thinking about maybe getting some pine trees because I've saw a really good deal at a nice Amish greenhouse on some pine trees. But the internet's telling me I should wait until spring because spring is perfect, and it's not early fall, or is it early fall? Can I still plant some pine trees for a windbreak?
That is the question of the day. Is it early fall? Is it mid-fall? You know, right now, I kind of feel like it's late summer.
Yeah.
It's just an interesting year climatically, you know, and weather-wise. So you need to look at your own individual location and what the weather is doing now and what it looks like in the future as far as nighttime temperatures and everything. But I can tell you that in general, fall, and we are definitely in fall is the perfect time to plant trees, shrubs, and perennials. The reason that we plant bulbs in the fall is, of course, because the ground is still warm, and we want them to develop a really healthy root system so that they can overwinter and in the spring grow their beautiful foliage and give us those great flowers. But the same thing is true for other plants. As long as you can get them in the ground and maintain a watering schedule for them throughout the fall, all the way up until the ground freezes, fall is the perfect time to plant. You can plant fruit trees. You can plant evergreens, but evergreens you have to especially be careful about making sure that you keep those plants watered. And by watered, I mean deep, thorough watering once a week, not a sprinkling every day. We like to make sure that the ground is really moist, not just at the root ball, but all around where you've planted, so that those roots have some place to grow.
Yeah. So I wouldn't waste a lot of time on this.
No, I would do it as soon as possible. I mean, where we are here in southeast Wisconsin, our nighttime temperatures are still in the 50s. You know, we're still very warm. The soil is very warm. So it's just the perfect time to plant things. If you've got perennials that need to be dug and divided and replanted, this is the time to do it because the soil is in perfect condition for that.
Good luck, Daniel. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Paula in Whitewater emailed to ask if the ground is too cold. She's in Whitewater, wondering if it's too cold to spread milky spore.
You know, there's a lot of controversy about milky spore and its effectiveness no matter the temperature. I don't know that fall is the best time to do it. That's not really my area of expertise. But I know that when we were doing a lot of the turf grass kind of talks and going to all of those, milky spore, all of the recent research, and I mean recent in the last 15, 20 years recent, it indicates that it's not very effective. And so...
And somebody may be wondering, by the way, what it would be used for to begin with.
Well, it's used to control Japanese beetle grubs and things like that. And it apparently years ago, when they first came out with it, it had some limited effectiveness depending on... It's an organic product, so I understand the appeal, but I'm not convinced of its effectiveness. So I'm not sure that it's worth the money and the energy to actually put it down and
use it.
Hope for the best.
Yeah.
It's not my area of expertise. So I'm hesitant to even give any recommendations about using it or not using it. My general thought is that it's not effective, so it's not really a good product to use.
You wouldn't be putting it on your own property.
No.
Okay.
No. I don't use that. No.
Okay.
I like it when natural and organic products are introduced into the market. I totally appreciate that, and I often try new things because, like everyone in the gardening world, we want to have as little impact as possible on our natural environment, and some of the older chemistries and the things that are used for lawn care are really not healthy for us. Some of the newer things that they come out with are much safer and much more environmentally friendly. So I'm always interested when they come out with new things, but what I do is I look to the research and try and decide whether or not it's something that really is valuable in the sense that it works. You know, it's important it's important to be safe, and it's important to look at all of the new things and to choose organic if that's what you would like to do. But you need to know that you're spending your money and your time effectively and efficiently, you know, that you're not just wasting your money on a product that's not going to do what you expect it to do.
Hmm. Well, let's, Paula, thanks for that email. Mark in Stevens Point on the line. What's on your mind, Mark?
Hi, Larry. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a what I thought was a bonsai tree that was sold to me this summer and planted it, but it's actually, as I was talking with Jill on the phone, it doesn't sound like that's what it is. And I found the tag. It's called a dwarf Japanese garden sculpture juniper.
Okay. Well, that sounds like it probably started as a bonsai.
Okay.
And so it may have started there that way.
Yeah, well, we successfully planted it in July and are wondering, it's on a stake. It has a bamboo stake on it. It's shaped like an S. And they have rubber bands on it to hold it to the stake.
Right.
And I'm wondering how to winterize that. I'm in central Wisconsin.
Okay. Do you know on the so Japanese sculpted maple? What that means to me is that it is one of the many Japanese maples, and there are hundreds of them, that has been treated like a bonsai. Bonsai is a technique or a style of gardening that involves root pruning and training and leaf pruning, stem pruning. It's a very intensive gardening method. And for it to be a bonsai, it really has to be in a container. So once you plant it in the ground, the roots, of course, are going to grow like crazy because now they have lots of soil and moisture and fertilizer, and they're going to take off.
Sure.
And as soon as those roots take off, then the upper part of the plant is going to take off as well. So unless you intensively work to maintain that shape and size, it's going to grow like a regular Japanese maple. But without knowing exactly what variety it is and actually what species, because sometimes things are called Japanese maple that are not Acer japonicum. They might be Acer palmatum, and so it's a different species. Some of those Japanese maples are hardy to zone 4. Some of them are hardy to zone 5. Some of them are only hardy to zone 6. And so without knowing exactly what that maple is, I can't tell you whether or not it's actually going to survive the winter. Are you in zone 4?
I'm not certain. We're in Stevens Point. I think that's 4.
I think that's probably zone 4.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, and I found the tag while we were talking here. It says
okay.
Topiary. Does that make sense?
Topiary.
Topiary.
So that's also a style of gardening.
And then it says, yeah, Juniperus procumbens.
Oh, it's a juniper. I thought you said it was, gosh, I had it in my head that you said it was a maple. I had that in my head that it's a maple. Juniper, oh, it's probably totally hardy. Most of the junipers are hardy until to zone 3. So you're probably good to go with leaving it outside in the ground. Like any evergreen, it needs to be watered weekly until the ground freezes because it will not drop its needles over the winter. So even though it goes semi-dormant, it doesn't really go truly dormant, and it continues to photosynthesize and respire over the winter months, so it will continue to lose moisture. And once the ground freezes, it cannot take up any water anymore, but it will continue to lose moisture. And so it's really important for evergreens to make sure that you keep them well watered until the ground freezes. But junipers are good to go until zone 3.
How about taking that post out? It's like a bamboo stake, and it's got rubber bands. Do you think we should
totally
take that off?
Take it off. Get rid of it.
Yeah. And then any coverings or anything in the winter?
No. You don't need any coverings on that plant. That'll be totally hardy. I'm really sorry. I don't know why I had maple stuck in my head, except I'm looking out my window at my maple and thinking about it. But junipers are super hardy, so that should be fine. If you want to maintain that shape, it will require some pruning, but I would wait until spring to do that. Just about the time that you start to see a little bit of new growth, then you can start pruning it. And it may take pruning. You may need to prune it more than once a season in order to keep it into that topiary shape that it's in, that S shape. So you can kind of trim it up. This is where you get out your little Japanese snips. So it's not done with regular pruners. You have to have those Japanese snips to keep it in the Japanese shape. So then you can prune that up and keep it going. The bamboo pole and all of that apparatus is really just to protect it during transport. It is not intended to stay on the plant once it's planted.
Okay.
There you go.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Our guest today, Patty Nagai, retired UW Extension horticulture educator. Jill Nadeau is our producer. Aubrey Ralph, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai. Pleased to have you listening in. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Patty, I wanted to mention that we've got the Wisconsin Science Festival coming back this fall, October 21st through the 24th. Lots of great events across the state for people of all ages. And I'm excited. I get to be part of a talk about fungi, mushrooms in our state. I've got a panel of five experts across a broad range of disciplines. And we're going to take a look at the roles that fungi play in supporting and sometimes threatening important Wisconsin habitats and industries. So I'm inviting everybody listening to join us on October 23rd for a closer look into that wild and robust world of mushrooms. Registration's free, and you can attend in person or you can do it online. And it's that's a Saturday, October 23rd. I think it's at 1 o'clock. But just go to wisconsinsciencefestival.org, wisconsinsciencefestival.org, and on the 23rd, you're going to learn all the good, the bad, the ugly, and the pretty of mushrooms.
They're very interesting.
Yeah.
Can people send pictures?
Yes, and in fact, all of our guests are going to have photos of various mushrooms, and some of them are just absolutely breathtaking, and some are pretty ugly.
I have a beautiful example of some shelf fungi at a tree that was cut down by the greenhouse where I work, and I would love to send that picture to you.
well, send it to me, and we'll get
okay.
Send it to me with a little note of a background, and we'll stick it in there for sure.
Okay.
All right.
We'll do.
Well, let's see here. Back to business on callers. Duke in North Prairie has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Duke.
Hi. Good morning. I hear a lot about when to prune and when not to prune. I'm pretty sure it's a box elder. Maple, good sized tree. It's a dual mm-hmm. trunk, kind of leaning away. Each trunk leaning away from each other, but mm-hmm. it obviously started together. Roots are, and it has really stretched out on both sides. Beautiful shade, but I'm worried about snow and that if we get a big snow on that thing. I'm thinking mm-hmm. some things are going to break. Is it okay to prune it at this time to avoid that?
You can certainly prune maples. Box elder is a maple, so you can certainly prune them in the fall. That's not a problem. They can be pruned all the way up until, spring when the leaves are starting to leaf out. It's better if you can get the woody plants like that pruned before leaf bud break in the spring. Box elders traditionally grow that way. It's very interesting to me that they survive as long as they do because almost all of the ones that I see are multi-trunked or leaning or both. They're multi-trunked and both trunks are leaning. I have seen them lift up out of the soil. I rarely see them break. So they must be tougher than you would think as far as the strength of the wood. But I have seen huge box elders that lean like that actually lift up out of the soil and come crashing down. So it's not the limb breakage that is generally the problem. It's the weak root systems that you get enough rain and they just kind of fall over.
Yeah.
There
you go, Duke.
Pruning is a good way though to reduce some of the weight load.
Yeah.
Especially on the portions that are leaning over that much.
Mm-hmm.
Box elders are quick growing trees. They're short-lived. They typically only live to be like 30 years old, and then something happens to them.
There you go, Duke. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Jean in Rice Lake emailed, ask how she can successfully bring her, how do I pronounce this,
osteospermum.
Osteospermum. It's hard to. I know the word, but sometimes you look at it and it's hard
it
to pronounce.
It has too many letters, Larry. It just has too many letters. Osteospermum. That's the daisy, sometimes called South African daisy, or sometimes people call them painted daisies. But painted daisy is actually a completely different plant.
She wants to bring it in.
Yeah, they are grown as annuals here. We typically don't. It's not a plant that we would typically grow inside, but you could, of course, bring it inside if you have enough light, and if you take care of it really well, you could probably still get blooms on it. I was just talking to someone yesterday at the greenhouse who brings her Gerber daisies in every year, and she's had them for like 5 years, and they bloom beautifully inside. But she's got great light and extra artificial light on them, and she takes really good care of them. And so they, you know, it can be done. I always recommend that when people are bringing things in from outside, that before you do that, you make sure that the plants are clean. If you're digging them out of the soil, it might be a good idea to repot them into some clean soil. If they're in a pot, make sure that you're flushing those pots out with plenty of water to make sure that you're not bringing in any insects. There are insects, of course, that will reside in the leaf axils or on the flowers themselves that you really just don't want to bring any of that in your house. But there are also insects that will get up into the containers, earwigs, pill bugs. I know somebody who brought in a baby snake. you just don't want to bring those type of critters into your house. So make sure that it's clean. I also recommend that for plants that have been outside all summer that you do some sort of insecticidal soap or neem oil spray on the plants for those little insects that perhaps you can't see, that once you get them in the house, they will proliferate like crazy. Aphids even. Aphids, whitefly, scale, mealybug. All of those lovely little critters that will feed on that succulent tissue and be so happy to be in your protected house.
Well, let's take another call. Frida and Merrill, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
I had a hydrangea tree planted in my yard this summer, mm-hmm. and I was wondering if I have to do anything to winterize it.
No. Where are you located?
Merrill.
In Merrill.
That's pretty far up there. That's where we get our Christmas trees from. it should be fine. Those hydrangeas are pretty tough. You could, if you're worried, if you get a lot of wind, once the leaves drop, you could think about cutting back those branches. Normally with hydrangea trees, what happens is that they grow so vigorously over the summer that the individual branches on the top part of the tree can get, you know, 4 or 5 feet long, which might whip around a little bit in the winter wind and you might get breakage. Whereas if you just go ahead and cut them back, you won't get as much breakage and it'll be a little bit sturdier over the winter season. I do recommend that you mulch around the root system of the plant. And if it is, you said, I think it was newly planted, you might consider once the ground freezes, putting a really heavy winter mulch around the base of the plant just to protect it from freeze thaw. You probably get a tremendous amount of snowfall on a normal winter, though, so it could be that you're
going to be okay.
Your snowfall is going to give you enough protection over the root system of the plant that the winter mulch might not be as necessary as it is for us down here in southeast Wisconsin. But, you know, those are some things to consider. You don't need to cover it or anything like that. They're very hardy.
If you did mulch, wait until, as Patty says, be sure to wait until after the ground is frozen and all those critters have found other places to stay.
Right. If you mulch too early, and it's a real problem here, especially this year because it's just so warm. If you put down that heavy mulch really early, all it does is provide a wonderful home for all those little meadow mice and other rodents to...
Holes and everything, yeah.
Yeah, and then they think, oh, she's given me this great home, and it's right next to this tasty plant. I will have food and shelter all winter.
There you go, Frida. Thanks for calling. Oh, boy. Lori in Montello, your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Good morning. I was asking about my lavender plants. They are finally doing wonderful. I cut them way back in spring, and they're just blooming so well this entire year. And I've been told or heard that fall is the best time to cut them down or cut them back. And I was wondering if that's true and how much I should cut back.
Well, you know, I have read so many different opinions about this.
Yeah.
And I've also tried different things in my own yard. And what I do is I leave them standing over winter and I prune them back in the spring. And I seem to have very good success with that. I only have one type of lavender in my yard, though, and it's the one that's called Phenomenal. So the lavender growers, you know, there are lavender farms on Washington Island, and then there's another one, I think, somewhere in the middle of the state. And what they, I believe, were recommending is that in the fall, you cut it back halfway. So, and then the other part was to make sure that you're removing the blossoms once the blossoms are done, that you kind of deadhead them and then cut them back halfway in the fall. But here in southeast Wisconsin, I leave them standing over the winter, and then I clean them up in the spring so that they have all that new fresh growth coming out in the spring. And that is what has worked for me.
Yeah. They do add some dimension in the wintertime coming through the snow.
Yeah, they hold up really well.
They look nice.
Yeah, and right
and
now, I don't... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
When is the best time to transplant them? First, I don't know how they spread, but they are on my sidewalk, and then they go underneath the sidewalk and come on the other side. So they might spread by their root system, but I'm afraid to transplant them at any time, so I want to know when that would be a good time to transplant them.
Okay. Patty, what do you think? Did we lose Patty? Oh, maybe we might have lost Patty there for a...
Hello.
Oh, there you are.
Well, what happened?
I don't know.
I was talking, but you weren't hearing me.
I was talking, you were talking, neither one of us. No, you were hearing me, but I wasn't hearing you. All right. Well, Let's go. What did you just say, Patty?
Oh, well, this is what I said. Well, I said a lot of things, but I'm not sure how far she heard my answer. So she was asking about transplanting the lavender.
And yeah, and when to do it.
Right. So you can do it now if weather-wise it looks like you're still got a few weeks of reasonable weather. And, you know, I always... Like for people who are in other parts of the state, a soil thermometer is just so incredibly handy if you know what your soil temperatures are. This is the perfect time to transplant things, and that's true for lavender as well. As long as you can get it in the ground and maintain weekly watering on it until the ground freezes, because it is kind of evergreen, and it will continue to spread roots this fall and then come back in the spring. You shouldn't have too much trouble with it planting now. If you wait much longer, the ground might be a little bit too cold.
Yeah.
So you might want to take a thermometer and just see what those soil temperatures are. Down here in southeast Wisconsin, we're still pretty warm.
And Phenomenal is a good name for your lavender.
It's phenomenal. It truly is. It comes back.
I've seen it. It's pretty amazing. All right. Well, let's see. I've got, Jim emailed to ask if he should prune young weeping cherry trees. He's concerned about preventing ice and snow weighing down the breaking branches or weighing down and breaking branches.
No, I would not be worried about that. The only I have a weeping cherry. I've had it for about 15 years. The only time I prune it is when I have a dead branch, and I will prune those dead branches off, or when they start crawling across the ground. And then I have to shorten them because they will crawl across the ground, and they will root, and make like little cherry tree ground cover.
So there you go, Jim. Thanks for that question. Dale in Sheboygan, your turn. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Yeah, thank you. I've got an apple, crabapple tree and a garden below it, and I have trees growing up in my garden and pushing out the columbine and the bee balm and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
How do I get rid of those? What's that?
The trees. You want to get, you have seedling trees?
It's the little seedling trees, and I prune them back to the knot every year in the spring, and they come right back, so...
Yeah, you really need to get the roots out, so that's hard. That's hard work. But it's important to pull those when they're seedlings before they get so well established. Sometimes plants will send out runners and send up trees from the root system, and trees that tend to do that, crabapple sends out suckers, but those are right next to the trunk, so they do a lot of seedlings. Maples do a lot of seedlings. But things like dogwood and sumac and poplar, and there are some other things that will send out underground runners. And so you'll get trees coming up from the root system, which is really difficult to control. There are some products that are designed to stop that suckering kind of growth. Most garden centers don't carry them. They have names like Sucker Stop, which is very descriptive, and it's a hormone that actually stops the production of those things. But more often than not, the only way really to control them is to pull them out and use a long-bladed trowel to try and get that entire root system out of the garden so that they don't come back. Just cutting back to the crown for those type of plants doesn't usually stop them from growing. You'd have to get the roots out.
There you go. Thanks, Dale, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Eau Claire, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi, thank you. You know, with the lilacs blossoming twice this year, I'm not sure when to prune them. I normally do it in the spring.
Right.
After it blossoms, but I'm not even sure if we're going to get blossoms next year. So I'm just wondering if I can prune them this fall.
I would let it go and just leave them over the winter, because if you do prune now, there could very well be blossom. You might still have some flower heads on there that are going to bloom next spring. I guess if you want to do something, you could just prune off those flower heads that were the late bloomers and just prune those off. But I'm just letting mine go. Sometimes I do that with my hydrangeas and my other flowering shrubs. I just let them go over the winter and then just see what happens in the spring. This has been a really interesting year for a lot of things as far as flowering goes.
And we've had a lot of questions about it. I know we have another email from Lori who says, what the heck is this climate change? I've got a second blossom bloom on my lilacs.
Right. And lilacs will do that. There are some varieties that are marketed specifically because of that they will put out a second flush of blooms in the fall. It should, a lot of times when that happens, whether it's a variety that's supposed to do that or a variety that you've never seen do that before, a lot of times when that happens, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to have any blossoms in the spring. But if you prune back your shrub now, you
ain't going to get any
blossoms in the spring. So sometimes it's better just to kind of let it go. You know, you can just trim off those late flowers to neaten it up a little bit, but I would let the rest of it just leave it and see what happens in the spring.
There you go, John.
Lilacs are funny that way.
They are indeed. Thanks, John. Well, let's see. Dot in Chippewa Falls, what's on your mind?
Hi. I was listening to you earlier, and you were talking about like drenching your plants when you bring them in from your garden that you want in your house.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm concerned that I don't know how much water you're supposed to drench them in, because wouldn't they then be overwatered? Sometimes when they're overwatered and you bring them in the house, or after you bring them in the house, it's hard to dry them out again.
Well, when I say to flush out those pots, what I mean is you can put the pots up on something so you can actually see the water coming out of the bottom of the pot. Overwatering doesn't happen from a single watering event. So I could have a, like, for example, my citrus trees, I have them up on these pot feet so that the water freely drains out the bottom of the pot. I will flush those for several minutes. I will water, 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 and make sure that I have flushed out the whole pot. And then it drains. So the pot is still, it's only going to hold so much water. No matter how much water you put on there, as long as you have drainage holes that are freely draining, the pot is only going to hold so much water. But what it does is, if for some reason I have had little critters go up into those drainage holes and try to make a home in the bottom of the pot, whether it's earwigs or pill bugs or something else, when I water like that, it actually flushes them out of the pot, and they leave because they don't like that much water. So they leave, the pot fully drains, and then I can move it inside. The pot is, that's not what overwatering is. Overwatering is if I bring that pot in, and now it's wet, right? So I put it in its tray, and I set it by the window, and then I water it again, and it's sitting in water.
Yeah.
That would be overwatering. I water it, bring it in, and then I water it again when it's dry. So I let it dry, and then I'll water it again. So that watering system that you're using for various plants is going to be highly variable depending on how big the plant is, how big the pot is, what kind of soil you have, how dry it is in your house, how many leaves the plant has. There's so many factors that can affect how much water that plant's going to use. But the pot itself is not going to hold any more water, whether you flush it through or just fill it up one time.
Dot, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate you. Yeah, it is a darn good question.
Very good question.
Yeah. Patty Nagai back with us, retired UW Extension horticulture educator. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai, retired UW Extension horticulture educator. Happy to have her back with us. She does such a wonderful job. Questions? Email ideas at WPR.org, phone 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Well, Gary in Bayfield emailed. He has a Harry Lauder's walking stick in a pot about 16 inches high and 16 inches around. He didn't get it in the ground this year. Should he put it in a garage that stays above 30 degrees all winter, or one that's heated to stay above 40 degrees, or bury the pot in a raised bed? The bed's 12 inches high, and he would dig down into the native sandy soil and mound up around the pot.
Yes, that's the answer right there.
Yeah, that's the best one.
It's always better if you can have a plant that's meant to be outside, really should be outside. And the key to keeping things in containers outside over our Wisconsin winters is to make sure that that root system is protected. So although the plant itself might be winter hardy, and it might be winter hardy to minus 30 degrees, the roots of that plant are not necessarily hardy to even minus 10. It's highly variable from species to species as to that root hardiness. It's really interesting, the work that's been done in that area, and it explains a lot of things about survival. So, you know, I'm sure you've heard me many times say, you know, we really want snow. Snow cover is like the best thing ever, because snow cover is what helps protect our soil from getting too cold. And when our soil freezes, you know, it's just the top here in the southeast, up north. I don't know what.
Gary's in Bayfield. He's going to get
Bayfield,
more.
You know, I don't know how deep their soil is freezing. But usually it's just the top few inches that actually freezes. And so when it freezes, that's 32 degrees. And then the soil that's below that actually can be warmer than 32 degrees. So it's unusual in the winter for our soil temperatures to drop down, you know, below zero, which is where we start to see shrub and tree death. And yeah, that can happen if we have no snow and then we get severely cold temperatures.
Yep.
And it does happen every now and then where the soil actually gets below zero, and it can go down pretty deep if we don't have snow cover. But with snow cover, we don't usually worry about that. So if you've got something in a pot, it's exposed to the air temperature. And that is deadly for most plants, you know, that they just can't tolerate that minus 20, minus 30 degrees. And what's even worse is if you have fluctuating temperatures.
Yeah.
So it goes down to minus 20, and then the temperature gets up to 20 or 30, and then it goes back down to minus 10. That type of fluctuating temperature is super harmful to almost all plants. And so burying it in the soil is definitely the way to go. Your garage, your unheated garage, would be the second best, the one that's at 30 degrees.
Yeah.
The 40-degree one is a bad idea because that plant is not going to go truly dormant, and then it's going to be weakening itself all through the entire winter months.
And you're not going to be happy, Gary. Thank you.
No, and we want you to be happy, and we want your walking stick to be happy, too. So you need to get those roots buried.
Let's go to Florin in Richland Center. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi. Anyways, I have this Amugo pine out in my yard. It's a huge thing. And it gets to pine cones and stuff. And I noticed the pine cones, you know, they pop open and the seeds jump out.
Mm-hmm.
So this past spring here, I put a paper bag and a rubber band around, and I caught a bunch of the seeds and threw them in little teeny containers,
mm-hmm,
with potting soil. And mm-hmm, lo and behold, baby mugos come up, a couple of them. And I kept them all summer and got them, well, maybe 3 inches tall. And just within the past couple of weeks, I took them out in like the hillside yard / lawn kind of field.
Mm-hmm.
I made a nice hole for them in soil, and then dug a little hole and stuck them in.
Okay.
And watered them, and they seem happy. And then I put a little hardware cloth around them to keep everything off of them.
That's good.
So, and at least one of them seems perfectly healthy, and the other one, I don't know if the soil is the best, but it's still there. So I figured, well, out in nature, they'll live through the winter. I don't know. Do I have to throw a bale over them for the winter, or do I just let them go?
No, just let them go. It's very cool. I love it when people do things like that.
Yeah.
It's really neat. So the sometimes I have pines just popping up in my garden beds, and I'm just always fascinated when that happens. And I usually put them somewhere else. I'll move them and put them somewhere else, but I don't do anything special with them because I just let Mother Nature take care of that. The key, again, it's an evergreen. It needs water. Just make sure that you don't let them dry out. When they're really little like that, desiccation is deadly.
Yeah.
So just make sure that they stay watered. But other than that, they should be able to survive the winter just fine. But water is super important.
Good luck, Florin. Thank you for
That's
calling.
Cool.
Yeah, it is. It is indeed. Dwayne in Wausau, what's on your mind?
Oh, hey guys. About a year ago, like a few of my lilacs that are pretty tall in a row of about 70 feet died. So I cut them out. The leaves got black, you know, and then this year they just all died. I mean, they all went, you know, the leaves turned black.
Yeah.
And so it's a nice barrier because there's a field behind us and, you know, like could do soccer. So I don't even want to cut them down. I'd rather look at the sticks. You know, they're like 20 feet high, but to get rid of them, is it better to, you know, dig them out, or I don't want to just cut them at the base. And, you know, I thought if I cut them, maybe the suckers would come up and make a new hedge. What do you think on that?
Well, it depends on what the, it sounds like you might have had some kind of fungal disease. So it depends on what it was that actually killed them. You know, if you have a a section that has any signs of life at it all, where you could get a good branch and maybe even a root sample and send that in to the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic and see if Brian Huddleston can diagnose what the disease is. There might be a treatment for it, or it might be that it truly is fatal and that they're completely done. If it's something like verticillium wilt, that would be good to know if that's what killed your lilacs, because that will affect anything else that you want to plant in that area. So sometimes even if the plants are dead, it's really important to know why they died, you know, so that you can plan your next planting accordingly. If it is verticillium wilt, you know, you might end up not being able to plant any deciduous plants there. You might have to go with like an evergreen shrub. As far as removing the lilacs themselves, it's always good if you can get the roots out, because they may start to sucker, and if it is a disease, you're going to get suckers, and then the suckers are going to die, and it's just going to look really bad. If it doesn't bother you to have the trunks there, you could just cut the trunks down, and you could put a heavy layer of mulch over them, and that might stop the suckers from coming up, and you would have just a layer of mulch. But it is important to figure out why they died. And that, because it could very well affect anything you want to do in the future as far as planting.
There you go, Duane. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, if you just type that in, UW Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, into a search engine, you're going to find it, and you can get to Brian.
Right. And it would be good to read over his website anyway before sending the sample, because he's got some pretty specific requests about how the samples are sent, especially for verticillium wilt.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Steve in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. Question for you. We've got a postage stamp backyard, recently sodded, and we took out a tree early this year before we laid down the sod.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have all kinds of mushrooms popping up.
Yes, I knew you were going to say that.
And the problem is we have a dog, and the dog uses the backyard.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about, you know, her possibly getting into the mushrooms. Now, every morning I go out and I stomp on them and kind of scrub them in.
Right.
And I'm wondering, what should I be concerned about?
Well, there are some mushrooms that are highly toxic to people and dogs, so I'm always a little concerned about mushrooms in the yard. Typically what I do is I rake them up. So I don't just squish them into the yard, because you're just kind of spreading the spores around anyway. But once those tree roots fully biodegrade, you won't get the mushrooms anymore. It's kind of a seasonal issue dealing with the degradation of the wood and the moisture and the temperatures and everything. But what I do is I take the rake and just rake them up and get them out of there as I see them. I've been known to go out there and pick them by hand and just put them in a little plastic bag, because I don't want my dogs eating those either. Yeah.
There you go. Thank you, Duane. And Steve, and I'm sorry, and let's see, where are we now? Let's go. You know what? Dan and Poplar would like to know when to prune sugar maples.
Oh, pruning maples. So maples can be pruned in the fall or the spring. In the spring, typically you get a little bit more sap running, but that it's messy, but it doesn't really hurt anything, so they can be pruned in the spring as well. I like to wait until the leaves drop on the trees before I do the pruning, but I have pruned my maples both seasons without any problem. When pruning any trees, it's just important to make sure you have a really sharp blade, whether you're using pruners, loppers, or a saw, and that you keep it clean. You don't want to be spreading disease from one tree to another, so you can use rubbing alcohol, or you can use spray disinfectant like Lysol, and a clean cloth to keep your pruning equipment clean. Know that you're not spreading any diseases. And I avoid pruning on rainy days. So you don't want to prune when it's wet outside. So wait for a nice sunny, dry day when the leaves have dropped. Keep your equipment sharp and clean. you should be good to go. There's some really excellent one-page fact sheets on the website that show you how to make a proper pruning cut. So those are helpful. They're just nice little line drawings that'll show you how to make those cuts really nice and clean. For oak trees, though, it's better to wait until after November 15th to prune any oak trees.
I'd wait even longer.
Yeah,
with this weather.
You know what? You really shouldn't prune oak trees unless you have to.
Exactly.
They shouldn't be pruned.
Oh, man. Patty Nagai, our guest. She's a retired UW Extension horticulture educator. Always great to have her with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Patty Nagai, retired UW Extension horticulture educator, and talking about a lot of different things on the show today relating to the garden and the lawn and the trees. And I tell you what, if you have a question, call 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And you know what? Let's go to Roxanne in Oak Creek. Roxanne, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Patty, I am looking to buy a shrub to plant now that in the spring will give me flowers. What do you suggest?
Oh, there's so many choices. Some of it depends on what kind of look that you want and what color you're looking for, and how long you want it to flower. So a lot of times people want things to flower like forever. And in that case, it's hydrangeas. I mean, because there's really nothing else that flowers all summer and fall. But there, for spring flowers, there are all sorts of things. There are a lot of weigelias that are absolutely gorgeous, different leaf colors, different flower colors. Of course, there's forsythia, dwarf forsythia, tall forsythia, in-between forsythia, and those will bloom yellow. The lilac collection is phenomenal. There are just so many different types of lilacs, all different colors, white, pink, purple, blue, and even some bicolor flowers that are really nice. So those are possibilities, too. Do you have? Can you narrow it down?
Well, it faces east, but I do get sun there all day. I'm intimidated by hydrangeas because I feel like sometimes they just don't look good. So I guess something that would be easy.
Yeah, well, hydrangeas are, I like to say that they're not hard.
Oh.
They're very easy, but they can be tricky if you don't pick the right one. And that's the thing. So hydrangeas, if you do, how big can the shrub be?
I would say it's about a 4 by 3 foot area.
So no taller than 4 feet?
No, that could go up to probably 8 feet.
Oh, you could do so many different things. So some of the weigelias would be gorgeous. You know, you've got the wine and roses type with the dark leaves and the hot pink flowers. There's one called Tuxedo that has white flowers. There's one with yellow leaves called Golden Jackpot with hot pink flowers, lots of things available there. Those type of weigelia typically get about 3 to 4 feet tall, and they will take up that full 4 feet of width. Hydrangeas, you have a lot more choice as far as size, color, and type. The paniculatas are the easiest ones to grow. They're the hardiest. You don't have to do anything to them. If you don't want to prune them, you don't ever have to prune them because in the spring, the flower buds will just sort of come off themselves because mm-hmm. they just fall off when the new foliage and the new buds are coming. And paniculatas are, you can get them at different sizes. There's one called Bobo that only gets about 2.5-3 feet tall. Or you could do a little quick fire, which has got a pink blossom on it that gets about 4 feet tall, 5 feet tall. Or you could do a limelight, which gets about 8 or 9 feet tall. The paniculatas, hydrangea paniculata, the panicle-type hydrangeas, are the easiest shrub in the world to grow. And they do fabulously on the east side of the house. They're not as particular as the big-leaf hydrangeas. And a lot of times I think when people are you know, fussing about their hydrangeas, it's because they have a macrophylla, hydrangea macrophylla, the big-leaf hydrangeas, and they are just notorious for not blooming. And they have to be pruned at the right time, and they're just a little bit fussier. And it's the, you know, I work at a local greenhouse in Menominee Falls, and it's the, I get this question more frequently than anything. Why is my hydrangea not blooming? And it's always a big leaf hydrangea. And it's either not enough sun, or they're pruning it too much, or it's, they're not fertilizing it. You know, lots of things can affect it. Or it's just a variety that's fickle about flowering. But the panicle type hydrangeas, they're gorgeous, and they are so easy to grow. Strawberry Sunday is one that's a little bit kind of a medium-sized one. Beautiful pink flowers. Vanilla strawberry. There's just so many of them that they're just fabulous.
So there you go, Roxanne. Good luck.
Can you tell that I like hydrangeas?
And I love their names. They have so many nice names.
Oh, they do have so many. There's a new one called Candy Apple that's really pretty. And then there's Berry White, which cracks me up every time I tell somebody that they should try the Berry White hydrangea. And then I want to sing a little song. You
know? Oh, man. Well, let's see what's on Kathleen's mind in Greendale. Kathleen, hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about mums. I bought two beautiful mum plants from a grower, and mm-hmm. they were doing great. And then we've had a lot of rain in my area, and now they're starting to turn brown, some of the blooms, and they're getting slimy. And I'm just wondering what I can do.
Are they in the ground or in a pot?
They're in the pot, and I just have them dropped into urns in the front of my house.
Right. So pull them out of those urns, just kind of lift the pot up and see if they're sitting in water. So one of the issues is if they've gotten overwatered to the point that they're actually sitting in water, you could be getting some root rot. So pull them out and make sure that they're really draining and that your urns are draining and that they're not completely saturated and getting into kind of an anaerobic situation where those roots will rot pretty quickly. Other than that, you're just going to have to deadhead and take those brown blossoms off and try to clean them up and get them dried out. It sounds like they've just gotten way too much water. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot you can do about that once it happens, except for just to get them dried out and cleaned up a little bit.
Thank you, Kathleen. Appreciate the call. John in Poplar, we go to you next. Hi, John.
Hello there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I was wondering, I have some apple trees and some plum trees, and I'm wondering mm-hmm. when is the best time to prune them. My apples are small, very sparse between, and I have a lot of old growth branches that don't produce at all.
Okay. So there are... there's a lot of information I could give you about pruning apples, and I can give you just a brief synopsis of it here. But what I would recommend is that you go to the Extension website or to the publications website for UW-Madison and find the apple publications, because there are some really excellent
good ones
on growing apples in Wisconsin, and there's a separate one on training apples. So it's super important that pruning is done on a regular basis for apple trees to produce properly. And it's not just a matter of pruning at the right time. It's pruning correctly and making sure that you're removing the right branches, that you're maintaining the branches at the right angle so that you can maximize your your sun interception, your light interception to get good apple production. It's not that it's hard. It's not a hard process at all, but it does need to be done correctly. The best time to prune apples is in the spring, although sometimes in orchards they will do some fall pruning as well. Once the foliage has dropped, you can do some fall pruning. But spring, prior to any bud break, is a great time to prune apples. You should never prune fruit trees in the winter. So that's really the time not to prune, is once it gets super cold and we are into winter, so December, January, just don't even think about pruning your fruit trees in those months because you get serious damage.
There you go, John. Thank you so much for calling. Let's still go to Mary in Arena next. Hi, Mary. Whoop, we lost Mary. All right. Well, let's go to Chris in La Crosse then. Hi, Chris. Oh, we lost Chris too. Oh, my goodness.
We lost Chris. What's going on with your phones today, Larry?
I don't know. Well, let's go. Let's take some emails here. We got Colleen in Minnetonka, Minnesota. She just planted 10 arborvitae trees.
Mm-hmm.
How does she wrap them for winter? They are about 4 feet tall, planted in a row. Could she wrap burlap around them? Or
does she need to wrap them
individually? I'm not sure why she wants to wrap them.
So I've seen people do this before, and I don't know if they are trying to protect them from winter or from something else. So because, of course, deer like to eat arborvitae, and they typically will do that in the winter. So she might be trying to protect them from deer. If they're planted near a roadway, she might be trying to protect them from road salt. But if she's trying just to protect them from winter, they don't need to be wrapped.
No.
So I know that it's been done traditionally in some areas, and there are reasons for doing it in certain areas. If it's protection from road salt, the burlap actually needs to be done in a fence line in front of the arborvitae, not touching the arborvitae. Because basically you're just trying to prevent the salt from touching the needles, so you just want a barrier. So it's just a fence line of burlap that would catch any road salt that might be sprayed their way, but it should not touch the trees at all.
Yeah.
If you're trying to protect from deer damage, I suppose you could use burlap, and then it wouldn't matter as long as you just have them covered. You could just do them in a big cluster. But a better alternative would be something like chicken wire or hardware cloth and create like a fence around them to keep the deer from getting to them, but that they could still have full sunlight and air movement. So I don't have a good solid answer for that because it really depends on what she's trying to accomplish. But arborvitae are super hardy. They don't need winter protection as far as the climate goes.
I think we have Chris from La Crosse. Chris, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to propagate a rose bush. My in-laws are moving, and they want to keep the bush in the new house. So I've been taking cuttings, and it's not working out, but I did some more reading online, and I'm still wondering, like, what would be the best soil to put the cuttings into, and given it's so late in the year, what would be the best way to get them through the winter?
Yeah, so cuttings this time of year are tricky because the tissue is a little bit too mature, so trying to get root development might not be the easiest thing. To maximize your success, though, I mean, it'd be better if you could just dig up the shrub. the best way to save that shrub would be just to dig it up and put it in a pot and take it up there and get it back in the ground. That would be the best. As far as trying to maximize success on the cuttings, I would take tip cuttings no longer than 6 to 8 inches long, strip the leaves off the lower part, make sure your pruning tools that you're doing these cuts with are super clean. You don't want any kind of infection on there. So use the Lysol rubbing alcohol. Make sure that your pruners are super clean. You can use vermiculite. You can use perlite. You can use sand. As long as it's something that doesn't stay overly wet, you can do them in a Ziploc bag. And I've done this before where I've taken a gallon-sized Ziploc bag and I've put perlite in the bottom of the bag, about 3 inches high, 4 inches high, a little bit of moisture in there. I make my cuttings. I dip them in the rooting hormone. I put them in the perlite. I seal up the bag, and then I put just a couple of little holes in the bag so that they have good air movement. And then every few days, open up the bag, check to make sure they're still moist, breathe in there a little bit, and tell them they're good cuttings and they're going to root really well because you can give them a little bit of CO2. And then I put them in a bright location but not in direct sun. You certainly don't want them to get too hot, but you don't want them to be in the dark. You don't want them to be too cold or too hot. It needs to be kind of a moderate temperature and bright light. And then just keep checking on them to make sure that they're staying moist and you're getting some fresh air in that bag. But the purpose of the bag is to keep the foliage from dehydrating too much while the roots are forming. I've had very good success using that method on a number of different types of plants, even late in the fall. But the best time to do cuttings, of course, is in the spring when you have a lot of new growth.
Yeah, absolutely. Chris, thanks very much for calling. Ann in Rice Lake, your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate your call.
Good, I love listening to your show. And I always love the gardening ones the best. my question is, my husband and I recently purchased a home, and there is a peony and a bleeding heart. They're very, very close to the house,
mm-hmm.
and they just didn't seem to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to transplant them to a better area, and I'm wondering what kind of sun they need and when would be the best time to transplant those.
You could transplant them right now. That would be good. Both of them are a little tricky to transplant because they have very interesting root systems that you will discover as soon as you start to dig them up.
Right.
The peony should be in full sun. So
okay.
Find a nice location, full sun, well-drained soil, where you want it to grow, and go ahead and prep the soil there so that you're ready to go when you transplant it. Because you really need to move it immediately. When you dig up the peony, go ahead and cut it back, dig up the roots, try to keep it together. The root system on the peony is bizarrely fragile.
it just kind of falls apart.
They're very weird looking. They look like, it looks like you have a whole nother creature under the ground. So dig it up, try to maintain as much of it as possible. Take it immediately over to the place where you've prepped it, put it in the ground at the exact same level it was at before. Do not plant it too deeply. So
how far back should I cut it?
Oh, you can cut it all the way. You can cut it all the way back to the ground. Whatever's easiest for handling for while you're moving it, but the peony can be cut back completely right now. So that's fine. You're just interested at this point in maintaining the root system. The top of the plant is not your worry. It's the roots. You just need to get those roots in the ground, and you need to get them not too deep. The roots of peonies are right at the surface of the soil, so just make sure they stay really shallow. Get them in the new location, put some mulch over the top of that, and make sure that you water it in really well. The bleeding heart also has a very interesting root system. You can cut that back as well, and that one needs to go in more of a shade, part shade situation. Again, well-drained soil. It thrives in a high organic soil, so if you've got an area in your yard that's really well-drained but really rich, composty kind of soil, it'll do really well there. And that one you need to make sure you don't plant too deeply either. It needs to be planted no deeper than it is currently, but more in a shadier area. And it should be fine, too. I've transplanted both with great success, but but the roots are just squirrely. They're just really weird when you start digging them up. So just, and don't worry about the tops of plants. That's not your worry. Your worry is just maintaining that root system and getting it at the right depth, water and mulch.
There you go, Anne. Thank you for calling. And Mary in Wasota. Hi, thank you for calling.
Is it Mary in Wascott?
Oh, Wascott. Oh, all right. Well, I got an interesting spelling.
Mary, you know where Wascott
is. I'm reading Wasota, and it should be Wascott.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, thank you for taking my call. And it's nice to hear that someone else has mispronounced Wascott. So thank you for taking my call. My question today is about my blueberries. These blueberries have been probably 15-plus years. I've had bumper crops of blueberries. I think there's three kinds in that clump, in that area that I have screened off from the varmints. So, but last year, I did cut them back because they were getting kind of overgrown.
Yep.
And I didn't have a very good crop at all this year. Are you not supposed to cut blueberries back?
I would not, because you probably removed the blossoms from them. So you need to just let them do their thing and not cut them back. It sounds like you've had really good success, though, so way to go.
Yeah, way to go. You must have some really good, perfect soil for it.
I know. I'm so jealous because here our soil is just not good for blueberries. I have three blueberry bushes planted in a raised bed in my backyard, and that raised bed is like filled with peat moss and sulfur trying to grow blueberries. I've gone to extreme measures trying to grow blueberries, so I'm very jealous. So
yeah.
I'm glad that you're having such good success, but don't prune them. Just let them do their thing. They do need some fertilization, though, so you might need to make sure that in the spring you get some fertilizer down there. Especially if you've noticed any yellowing on the foliage, you know, it could be that you've got some kind of deficiency going on that could affect the flowering as well. A soil test is always a great idea when you've got a vegetable garden or fruit production going on and you have an issue that comes up. Pruning, of course, is very important, too, that you don't want to prune off your flower and your fruiting parts of the plant. But it might be a good idea to do a soil test. And you can do that now.
Yeah, be a good time to do it right now,
mm-hmm.
Mary.
Absolutely.
And when you send that soil test in, tell them you're growing blueberries, and you will get back some information.
Specifically for blueberries.
Yep, specifically for blueberries. Thank you, Mary. And Patty, thank you. Oh, my gosh, what a lovely 90 minutes. Appreciate your coming by.
Oh, thank you. I am always happy to be on your show, Larry. It's a pleasure.
Well,
I like answering people's questions. I try to make things as easy as possible for people.
Patty Nagai, our guest. Retired UW Extension horticulture educator. We will have her back, and we'll do this again with her for sure. Monday at this time, our physical therapists are back to talk about deep gluteal syndrome and how to prevent it. Ouch. That's at 11 on Monday. But right now, lots in store. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk and the Ideas Network.